Good afternoon. It's now 3 o'clock, and I decided that I'm going to start on time so that we make sure that we have plenty of time to cover everything. As you know, this is an informal session. So what I want to do is I want to make sure that by the time you leave here, that you're chock full of information that you think is going to support you in your quest to build and to have and maintain a healthy marriage. Does that sound good? But you know, I'm Dr. Jackie, by the way. I'm also known as the how-to lady. So I want to open the floor later to allow you to ask questions. If you go to my website, Dr. Del Rosario, it says go ahead and ask me. That seems to be the number one thing that people want to do. Anytime I go to speak, they chase me out the door. Please, can I just tell you about this situation? Can you tell me what to do with that? I've spent about 23 years being married to the same guy, but on a pursuit to understand how to have a successful marriage. And I'm going to start my story just by sharing something with you. My parents were married for almost 40 years. But I remember, even though I grew up with my father and I was in a loving household, one thing that always stands out in my mind is the time that I was about 5 years old and I was laying in my bed, sound asleep, when I was awakened by a sound. And as I kind of laid in my bed listening, I heard my mother crying. And she just began to cry and she was talking to somebody, and I figured it must have been my father. But the sound of the cry that was coming from her was so painful. You know how you can tell when somebody's really hurting bad. It's a different cry. That's not a cry that you do when you're trying to look cute. Like, I mean, it's a gut-wrenching. And you could tell she was in so much pain. Now, if you can remember when you were five, you know that you really don't understand a lot of things. You lack vocabulary. But one thing that I was able to understand was that her pain was communicated just clearly for me through the way that she cried. And it created a visceral response in me. I wanted to know as a young child, why is she crying so bad? You know, what has happened? And then I could hear as I listened very intently, she says, "Why, Joe, why? Who is she?" And as I listened closer, I understood that there was some sort of infidelity that had occurred, and it broke my mother's heart. So this is the backdrop that I want you to understand as I go and begin to delve into the session. Because that, even though I believed in love, are you hearing me? I believed in love. That was like a haunting thought because I couldn't understand why our happy family seemed to be so fragile at that moment. I didn't know if it was going to continue. I didn't know why it got like that, what happened. And so I've spent my life trying to understand, how do you build a successful marriage? Is there a recipe book? Let me know so that I can buy it. But I've really come up with some very sound solutions. And so what I want to do is I want to kind of jump in and talk about what I've discovered and help you to dispel some myths and get you on the path to also having a happy marriage. But I want to start with just a joke. I want to tell you this story. There was a couple. They were avid golfers, right? So they had just come off of the greens, and they were like driving back, and the wife was just saying, "You know, honey, let's talk about our future." And the husband goes, "Yeah, sure, honey." You know how men are. They don't say too much. It's like grunts and little one-word phrases. Yeah. And so she goes, "You know, when I die, I mean, if I die before you, I mean, are you going to let your new wife live in our current home?" And the husband's like, "You know, I guess so. I mean, it is paid for." She goes, "And what about this car? You think you guys will keep this car and use this car?" And he goes, "Well, I guess, why not?" He kind of loosens up a little bit. "Yeah, why not?" She goes, "And what about my golf clubs? You going to let her use those too?" And he goes, "Oh, no, she's a lefty." Yeah. She's a lefty. He's already been shopping for the new wife. Well, I want to start off by talking about some of the things that I learned on my 23-year quest that really helped me to solidify a happy. Not only have I been married for 23 years, but I've been happily married. I'm still happily married. And I'm learning how to fall in love with the same man over and over again, year after year. And one of the things that I discovered was that we have some myths that kind of put us at naught with our endeavor to have a happy marriage. Now think about it. We as young women, we're socialized from the time that we're young to think about love and this mystical concept. We learn about it from, you know, our fairy tales, Snow White, you know. I mean, if you look at any Disney movie, everyone that I can think of, even Simba, had Nala, you know. You're talking about Aladdin, you know, and then he had his little princess, Jasmine. I mean, Mulan. It goes to even the Far East. So this boy meet girl concept has kind of given us this false notion about what romance and what a real relationship is all about. That doggone Cinderella has gotten more people in trouble than the law allows. So we want to go ahead and deal with the myths that are kind of clouding our ability to embrace what's before us. Because I believe that if your concept is wrong, then your outcome is always going to be wrong. So if your concept is to look for love in this kind of a place and have this sort of a love image, and it's the wrong concept, guess what? You're going to be unhappy. So that's what happened to me. You know, my parents, from the time I was very young, talked to me about getting married. When you get married, we're going to have a wonderful, beautiful wedding for you. How many of you all had the same kind of story? What, the parents aren't talking about? You're kidding. Oh, come on. Loosen up. Who else? I know my parents talked about when you get married. Are you kidding me? Nobody. Okay, so we got some brave people stepping up. Very good, very good. So, you know, when I got married, again, in the back of my mind, I believed in love, but I was concerned about whether I could do it right. And then I thought that my love interest was going to be this new 21st century ideal about, you know, my soulmate. Because remember, it used to be the Prince Charming. Nobody's riding up on a white steed to save you. Nobody. But still, that romanticism about love is what we have in our mind, instead of understanding that love is a four-letter word, just not a bad one. It's called W-O-R-K. And most men are not romantic. You have archetypes of different type of men, and most of them are not romantic. So you're only going to have a quarter of them being romantics. But remember, for every action, there is a reaction, right? So the romantic guy is going to be just that. He's going to be very romantic, always thinking of all these things to do to show his love. I didn't get any poems written by my husband. He didn't make up a song in my name. He was more sweet, you know. He was the kind that would bring you a teddy bear and chocolates, you know. Maybe not the kind that on a bent knee with a rose, you know. He didn't do that. So already I'm thinking, well, this is what real love looks like. My question to you is, what is your concept of love? Is it based in reality, or are we back at Disney? You know, are you expecting your mate to perform some unusual acts of kindness and chivalry for you? You know, or is your real concept of love that it's about a relationship that you're going to have to work out? The good news is this. You can build a strong relationship. I discovered that there's 7 pillars, that if you build all 7 of them strong, you can have a healthy marriage, and it will go the distance. So first step is compatibility, getting somebody that's like you. You know, we've been taught that differences, you know, attract, and it's a lie. When you want to marry somebody, you don't want to be Dick Dastardly and Susie Straight Lace, you know? You need to have someone that's like you. Why? Because the closer you are to one another in terms of your views, your worldviews, your morals, and your values, the more harmonious your union is going to be. Now, if Susie Straight Lace is going with Dick Dirty, think about it. What is Dick Dirty going to want to do on a Saturday night, and what is Susie Straight Lace going to be wanting to do? They're already at odds. Now, what kind of children are they going to raise? Susie Straight Lace wants to send him to a parochial school. You know, she wants him to dress nicely. He's going to be drinking beer with his buddies and, you know, totally different trajectory, right? So what's good to have differences in is our temperament. And I'll guarantee you, most of you in here are going to tell me that your husband and you have opposite temperaments. So your temperament is the way that you express your personality. That can be different, but your core self cannot be different. It needs to be the same. So, for example, I am, as you can tell, Machine Gun Kelly. That, right? My husband is, you know, Jalopy Joe. He's the one, you know, he kind of trots along. He's even keeled. He's not too animated. I'm extremely animated, you know. Those are opposite temperaments, and so we balance each other. Now, how many of you all think that you're really looking for your husband to be just like you? Be honest. Y'all already lied about the marriage, the wedding thing, so I don't know. I might be throwing myself under the bus by even asking. But how many of you all want your husbands to be just like you? Somebody's there for the first 10 years. I like you. You know what? Well, she gets a gift card. Let me give her a gift card. Can I have my bag? Thank you. Yeah, now that's brave participation right there, and it must be rewarded. Brave participation. And I agree. I think that most of us want them to be too much like us, and we don't appreciate our differences. But we also have to really dispel this idea, this notion that that we're in for this deep romance and you're just going to make love all day and, you know, have that sort of, you know, I think most of you are over that already because it hasn't happened yet. What I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to get you straightened out because you're still upset about it. So I'm just wanting you to know it's okay. It's not supposed to happen, really, and it's not going to happen. So get over it. Here you are, my love. And so you can even give that to your husband and say, baby, look what I got for you. See how it has the soccer balls and the football balls on and everything? Isn't that something? Because in my house, anything with a ball, if it's thrown, kicked, you know, what's another thing? Thrown, kicked, dribbled, shot, that's what my television is on. I will guarantee you by the time I hit home tonight, they will be lined up if there's anything on. It doesn't matter if it's college ball, if it's NBA, NBA, NFL. Come on now. Now, you know, I'm bilingual. I speak man. And I speak male. Yes, I do. So anyways, let's get back on point. But just dispelling the myth, I found that after I got married, I was unhappy. And one of the reasons, the biggest reason why I was unhappy is because I was expecting something that I should have never expected. My concept was wrong, so therefore my outcome was wrong. One of the problems that women have is we like to believe that a man is supposed to, this goes to this mysticism now, this romanticized ideal of relationships. We feel like a man, if he loves us, he should know what we want and what we like. It sounds crazy when you say it out loud, though, doesn't it? If he really loved me. And so what I learned was that most of the differences between men and women are all biological. There are gender differences. Now, I'm going to break it down for you. Just a simple fact that I love to repeat over and over again. Did you know that a woman's brain has, on average, 2 to 5 language centers, while a man's brain only has 1 to 2? So not only does he not want you to talk to him too much, he wants the cliff notes of your day. He also has an inability to really communicate back. And this has caused some of you all a lot of pain and grief because when you're complaining, saying, honey, this happened and such, and I just would wish that you would do so and so, and then he doesn't answer you back and you say, but that was a question. And he kind of just sits and looks at you like this. You interpret it as being, he doesn't care enough about the way I feel. I'm trying to pour my heart out and he doesn't even care. He won't even answer me back. It's because of those language centers. He's going to need more time to process. So you're going to have to give them a get-out-of-jail-free card and sometimes give them the opportunity to go away and come back maybe later that day or even maybe tomorrow to finish the conversation with you because he's going to need time to process. We're instantaneous processors. We remember dates, times, locations, what you said, what she said, what we did, and they just cannot contain that sort of information. This trickles down into a lot of different things. Let me go through some of them. One of the first ones would be that we have an ability to multitask that they don't have. So, for example, my husband might be washing the dishes. Hi, honey, your brother's on the phone. Could you pick up? Okay.
Hello?
Yes, and he's talking to his brother and everything. He cannot continue to wash the dishes
while he's talking on the phone. Now, we can burp the baby, go to the bathroom, and at the same time be timing the cake that's in, you know what I'm saying? But it's because of the way that our brains have cross-linked over and those language centers and our ability to understand cause and effect, they can't do that very well. If you ever notice, you say, well, remember you did such and such and such, and then you try to tell them and they're like, yeah, but that's like the time when you did such and such, and you're like, are you retarded? That's not the same things. You know, but see, I have a man here, so I'm afraid, you know, I don't want anybody, I don't want it to sound like I'm bashing because I really think, I already told you guys you were cuckoo with that wanting them to know what you're thinking and what you want. I did say that already, right? So I just want to make sure I'm playing even here. So that was one of the things that I found with my husband that was very difficult for me to understand. But I find that if you poll people that have been divorced, more than 60% of them say that if they had it to do again, they would not divorce the person. And I think that they've discovered what I discovered a long time ago. The reasons why is because you're going to have to marry another man. If he's got the same equipment, And so really I'm asking you to really understand and to begin to identify and embrace the gender differences. We have a mind that never stops. You can be even doing your wifely duties, and you know what I mean. And your mind is already thinking about what I got to do, you know. A man is actually able to go to a place in his mind where there's no activity. We can't. You know, I used to just think that my husband was holding out on me. Baby, what are you thinking? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? I need you to share with me like I'm sharing with you. I told you what I was thinking. What are you thinking? Nothing. I wasn't thinking about anything. The poor men. I mean, but wouldn't you love that if you could turn your brain off? Who in here has been able to do it? Some yogi or something like that, maybe. Look at her. She's saying, yes, she's a yogi. Wonderful. Well, I know I haven't been able to do it. But, you know, here's another thing. When a man finishes work, by the end of the day, his testosterone level drops down. So he needs to now recuperate and de-stress. Guess what causes them to de-stress? Who wants to tell me? Go ahead. Sex. Well, that was a little bit too much information, wasn't it? No, that really wasn't where I was going with that one. But anyways, no, actually what happens for them is when they do go to that place, like watching television allows them to zone out. And so as they sit on the couch and watch television, their testosterone level actually increases. Did you know that? Guess what increases our level of estrogen and decreases our stress? Talking and also touching. So you look at this. Now, I would be upset. I'm still upset just thinking about it sometimes about how my husband, I'm in the kitchen doing, and he sees me doing all that stuff, and he's sitting on the couch. The poor man is trying to refuel, right? But to me, it felt as if he wasn't caring about what I have to do to carry on the duties for, you know what I'm saying? But just knowing that was able to bridge the gap and allow me to really understand him and to give him the space that he needs. And now he knows how to make me shut up. Listen, I have a son. My son is, he just turned 19. So when he sees me start to carry on a little bit, he'll say, I know what you need. You need a hug. And he's like, he's like 6'2". And he'll like come and I'll say, no, I don't need a hug now. And he just goes in anyways. He goes, I'm coming in. And he just, you know, bear hugs me like this. And I'm like, I don't want a hug. Leave me alone. But he's already figured it out. He's ahead of us. He's already figured out. Just hug that heifer and she'll shut up. And So what I just did is I put to bed the Prince Charming mystique that we've walked in for far too long. You need to love the man that you're with. If you think that you've chosen well, he's like you, he's compatible, he's suitable to you. You need to now begin to understand what makes you different but makes you harmonious. And you need to accept that and learn to work around it. And one thing that I will say, you need to also tell them what you want. But you got to do it in what type of notes? Cliff notes. Don't go in the full novel version. You want to just tell them, honey, and also lower your tone a decibel. Honey, I need you to do, and just give the two bullet points. Boom, boom, boom. And see, doesn't it work? You know, I remember that movie with Janet. It's called The Breakup, right, with Vince Vaughn. And she was like, I want you to want to help me do. And the man's like, why would I want to do that? I mean, I don't want to help you do the dishes. That's something that's driven by your maternal instinct. Do you understand? We women, our metric, we judge one another based on how well you clean your house. Because if I go to your house, that's right, I'm going to your house. I go to your house and I go in and I see that the stuff is all over the floor and your house isn't picked up. Well, I'm going to be like, she's not a good wife and mother. You know, that's why we get bugged out when our husband brings somebody over without telling us. Because we understand that that's our metric. Do you know how much I've helped my couples just by explaining that to them? That, listen, why we judge each other based on how our houses are kept. So don't ever do that to your wife. If you're going to bring somebody up, I'll guarantee she won't mind as long as you clean up or help her clean up. Listen, I always tell my husband, honey, an aphrodisiac to me is coming home to a clean house. I mean, my underwear automatically fall off. I go through the door, I'm like, oh, a clean house. That's it, right? And so just sharing this sort of information with them, doesn't that make it a lot easier? You say, honey, for me, my aphrodisiac is, you know, a clean house. So if you want such and such, when I come home, I need to see this and that. Clear communication. You know, we got to get away from this thing that, you know, if I tell them, then it's going to lose all of the allure. That's a lie. I thought it was. I told my husband what I like for Valentine's Day, because, you know, we like to have open demonstration. So, like, you know, if they give you the flowers when you get home, let's, come on now, cover your eyes, Raul, but that's not nearly as good as if they come at the office. Once the doorbell, like on Valentine's Day, every time the doorbell rings, all the women are like, who's that for? You know, and then if a delivery guy comes in with the flowers, they like buzz around that thing. They can't wait. Well, who's it for? Who's it for? Everybody wants to know. Is that not true? Again, that's a female thing that we have. But we need to make sure that the men in our lives understand that. I told my husband, this is what I like for Valentine's Day. He used to hit and miss sometimes. You know, you get that ugly gift and you're like trying to say, oh, it's nice. Thank you. Well, did you wear it today? Oh, no, I'm going to save that for a special occasion. But I finally told him, listen, this is what I like. I love flowers, and I like them to be delivered. Now when every year is ching, you know, you have that little thing, you're smiling so big, it has a little sparkle on your tooth. That's how I am every year, because I was able to tell him. And it has not lost the allure of getting them every year because I told him one time. Most men now, if you make it simple, they can follow it. Tell them one time. And especially if most of y'all have been acting a butt, which I kind of get the feeling that some of y'all have been. You been acting up? Yeah. That's terrible. That's terrible. I just think that most men go through post-traumatic stress because some of y'all just cut the fool so bad when the men don't do what you think that they should have done. And poor guys, they're like deer in headlights. And you actually want them to tell you, does this make my butt look fat? You know, the men are like, oh, no, honey, I think you look good. You know, he's probably pointing out, you know, to the kids, like, don't say a word. So we just took care of the myth of the allure of this mystique of the fairy tale lover. Then we're also dealing with the soulmate issue. And that goes to bed based on just pure genetics, just the biological, physiological differences between men and women. Men aren't going to talk to you all day. Now, I wanted to know, just to take a little tangent, who can tell me what advice they were given about marriage before they ever got married? Because I feel like this. We learn how to do everything in school. We learn how to read and write. We learn even how to drive a car. But nobody teaches us the two most important things that you do in your life. And the first one is not only the family that you're going to build by getting married, the husband that you're going to choose, how do you create a healthy marriage? Nobody also teaches us how to be a good parent and how to build the future leaders of tomorrow. Those are two important things that we really need to know. Now, who can tell me if anyone ever taught you anything about marriage before you got married? Who in here? Please stand real quick. Everyone, I want you to tell me. Speak up. That was the advice? Did it work? Okay. Next. Okay, so.
No socks, no dishes, no nothing, but the kids' school, oh yeah.
How's that going for you?
It's going all right. Of course. Like, we only argue about things that are, like, have eternal spiritual issues.
Well, just cover up your angel's wings and sit down.
Not even close.
She doesn't argue about anything unless it's eternal. I mean, you're really good. I might have to give you a gift card for that, because, you know, I have to learn to be like that. I really do. I'm 50 years old and I'm going through the change. So, you know, I'm going to aspire to be like you because you have really outdone yourself. Thank you. Come on up. Next. Thank you. Very good. Very good. So mom passed on some wisdom. Next person. Did you hear what she said? Can you go to the microphone?
I just remember two things that my mother said. One was that you should never go to bed angry. And the other was you're not supposed to expect him to think what you're thinking, what you want, you ask for, because they don't think like you do.
That's very good.
And that works for me sometimes.
Thank you for being candid. Next. Who else? Who can tell me? Would you like to take the microphone? Sure. To do what?
That did work good.
Can you take that? Because I'd love to hear.
That's a first. They asked me to the microphone. You see that? Oh. I'm Southern, so Southern women are taught to obey their men. That didn't last, though, because I don't. But we're taught that men are sensitive. Even though they don't show it, they are actually more sensitive than females. Mm-hmm. But a real man will show you that, but most men don't. Mm-hmm. Mine does. Mm.
Can I add on to your point?
Yes.
The first thing is, I think if you get the right man, you need to find a man that you can obey. That's your secret. Find a man that you can obey. I'm a difficult person to commit to anything. I don't commit very easily, but because I'm very stringent, because I go all or none. Mm-hmm. So what I have to do is I always have to find people that I can follow. So you got to have your leadership skills down for me to follow you, because if you don't, then I can't follow you. So that's what I think that you need. I love that. And then about men being sensitive, more sensitive. Who agrees with that? You do? Who can talk to me on that? Can you come to the microphone?
I have three brothers and am the only girl, and my college roommates all only had sisters. So when my brothers when I was in college and they would go through a breakup of serious relationships, they'd call me all upset, and all of my roommates are like, who are your brothers? Like, I don't know, who are these people? What's wrong with them? And I'm like, and they'd be going through a breakup at the same time. They're like, my boyfriend, ex-boyfriend or boyfriend's not acting that way. Why is your brother? I'm like, he is. He's just not showing you that side because you're the girl. So being on the family side, his mom, his sisters are seeing it. But you as the spouse or the significant other don't see that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So why do you think, though, that they don't show it?
Because they're meant to be tough. They're macho. They're man. So they mm-hmm. can't show that to mm-hmm. the person. But I think, as you said, if it's a real man and it's a good relationship, then they're comfortable and then they can. So it's just a matter of the relationship and it being the right person. Like you said, if you can't, they're not a good leader, you're not going to follow. Mm-hmm. If they're not with somebody they trust and that they feel they can confide in, then they're not going to tell you. And they're not going to show that.
But you know what's really strange to me as I listen to this is I'm listening to the commentary, but then I counsel couples all over the country. And what's amazing to me is how many men feel that their manhood is being questioned by their wives. Meaning that they feel that even the very women that embrace them and call them their lover are the same women that they feel put them in a position where it's almost like things are being thrown back in their face, or that they're being made to feel, I guess, threatened by those shows of vulnerability and, softness.
We can be manipulative.
Yeah. And so I really like this statement because it really puts a responsibility on us in the room, doesn't it? To be careful about the way we socialize our kids. Don't tell a male child not to cry. You tell them real men cry. And then help them to understand what it is that they're feeling. Because I think that men have had to shroud their emotions, I don't think that they're very good at identifying what they are. You remember when you were young, when you tried to describe somebody that mistreated you or whatever, you didn't have the vocabulary because you really didn't know what it was about the person that you didn't like. And you learned that over time. Now, we're taught to always be social and to talk about our feelings. They're not. And so what I would love is to see that the women in this room would learn to embrace the men in their lives and to give them a safe place where they can also remove the mask and kind of be real men being vulnerable. And I would imagine that that's a very difficult thing to do. What I will share with you is this. Men will not share their pain with other men. This is the rule. They're allowed to do it one time. If they're in a breakup and somebody hurt their heart, they'll talk to their friend once. They might even allow them to cry, but only once. After that, when he calls them again and says, yeah, man, I'm really hurting. Right. What? Get it together. The other men chide him and say, get it together. You need to, come on now, let's move on. And so what they typically do is instead of going through a real healing process, they go ahead and they bury themselves in activity. So they'll be out there partying. They'll be at the booby bar and places like that because That's how they deal with their pain. And what I think is an interesting stat is this. It takes men, after a divorce, 5 to 7 years to recuperate from a divorce or from a breakup. A woman, it only takes 2 to 3. And you know why? Because we've talked to our girlfriends about it until we're blue in the face. I mean, what happened? He dead? No! You know, we just go through every little tot and tittle about that relationship, and so we catharse. We go through a catharsis. Who's allowing them to catharse? And to me, that's a very sad commentary. Anybody else with a comment as I move on? Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you all hear her? Okay, can you take the microphone for us? Because I love your comment.
Just wanted to make a comment about what you said about men take 5 to 7 years to get over a divorce. I just don't understand it because right after they split up or divorce, they're the first to start dating, they're the first to get married most of the time.
All of the time. All of the time. And I think that there's something in them that knows that their mortality rate significantly improves when they're married. So it's like, no, I'm serious. I think that there's like an innate drive for them to remarry. And I think that they need to be taken care of. So we know that when they're in a married situation, their mortality rate increases. So I think they need that. That doesn't mean that their heart still isn't broken, though, and that they actually completed the healing process. Those are two different, distinct things. So I'm going to move on now. Yes. Mm-hmm. They got somebody taking care of them. No, because they're probably not going to share like that. So it depends on the gentleman. Sometimes that woman can be a little, you know, we're territorial. We don't want to hear about the other woman. If I've already married you, you should have been over that by now. So think about it. Who is he going to tell about that? Right. So he's going to now suffer in silence until time has her perfect work, right? And you know about time. Time does do a work. She performs a work in our lives. I'm going to move on now and transition because I want to open the floor up for just some questions that you might have about your relationships. And so I want to talk about just three different tips. And the first tip is I want to encourage you to stop looking for greener grass. It's a natural tendency that all human beings have. Listen, you're looking at so-and-so's relationship. Your girlfriend's telling you, oh, they do it 5 times a week. Well, my husband, we barely do it once or twice, you know. It's always the greener grass syndrome. Stop looking for greener grass and instead put that energy into watering your own grass. There's something about what you focus on. In the Middle East, they learn to work with their champions based on their strengths, not their weaknesses. They ignore weaknesses because they found out that whatever you focus on, you draw to yourself. So if you're focusing on something negative, then guess what you're drawing to yourself? It's almost like you look for trouble, you will find it, right? And so I feel that as we look up, as we kind of begin to recognize that we have a tendency to look for greener grass, we stop comparing. If you want to improve your self-esteem in any of your relationships, stop comparing. And we as women being territorial tend to have that tendency. We always look at, I was going the other day around the corner and this lady, we kind of met eye to eye. Instantly she does like this. Because we compare. I refuse to compare myself to anyone because I am only the one original. There is no copy of me. You can never be me. You can't be like me, and I can't be you. So instead of trying to be a fake copy, let's try to become the best originals that we can. So let's let our marriages also reflect the fact that we are an original and that we're birthing into the planet children that are genetically different than any other ones on the face of the earth. Therefore, the organic nature of the unions that we're creating have to be different. They're going to be different. You have different needs. You probably don't want to do it 5-6 times a week anyways. So why are you comparing that? You can barely keep up with the 1 or 2 that you're doing. Am I right? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand to that, but so the greener grass syndrome, you got to remember that. Her butt's bigger than yours. Her boobs are firmer. You got to remember when you're looking at, but they look so in love.
And haven't you seen those same couples are now announcing a divorce a year later? And you thought that they had so much over on yourself. Honor and love. What is that song? You got to love the one you're with. Yeah, love your relationship. And I think that as you do, it will love you back. The second point is to accept conflict in your marriage. I think there's a misnomer. Most people believe that conflict, when you argue a lot in a relationship, that means that relationship has gotten bad. But here's two things I want to point out in that regard. Your relationship is going to evolve just like you grew up and evolved. Are you still the same person that you were in fifth grade, ma'am? No. You got some new equipment. You got a degree, probably. You know, you look a lot different, right? Because you have grown. Why is it that we always expect to have the same relationship that we had when we first fell in love with them, when you still had the braces on and all that good stuff, and we're broken in college with no money? I mean, of course, your relationship has to grow and change. We don't like the conflict that accompanies that. We don't like dealing with issues. But what I want to tell you is this. I believe that conflict in relationships is good. It's actually an indication that the relationship is trying to evolve on to another place or another dimension of itself. So think about it. What does it do? It puts pressure on the two people in the relationship to make some adjustments, because now that relationship is shifting into another dimension of itself. Are you hearing me? So sometimes, even if there's sexual issues, we can talk about, what is it, ED? Erectile dysfunction. I kind of think that a lot of the things that happen in relationships are really those, if you will, those road signs that are telling us this is the exit. You're going to go and take a new route now. But we, fearing change, do everything that we can to stop from going down that road. But really what it is that some of these changes are necessary for us to get to the next era of the relationship. Everything can't stay the same. Nobody stays the same. Even though some of these celebrities look like they do, nothing stays the same. So we have to accept change, and we have to also accept conflict. If you learn how to fight fair and you don't lose sight of the real goal, which is to evolve and to hold loosely the things that you have and let them change. Listen, some of the greatest improvements that I've seen is when, say, a couple is having problems sexually and maybe he can't do what he used to be able to do. What I feel is when you don't handle it the incorrect way and you embrace that change without fear and allow it to change and to become now what it's going to be, the depth of the lovemaking between that couple is profound. Why? Because you know when you're first married, honey, for the first, I'm going to tell you, 7 years or so, you're in a performing mode. You want to make sure that when it's done,
10,
you know, 9. You want to make sure that you don't have anything lower than an 8.5. Now, if nobody's going to give me an amen to that, then it's just okay. And the crowd said, amen. So after that period of time, because you're trying to make sure you outdid the ex-girlfriend or the ex, you know. But that relationship needs to grow now. So it needs to go to a place where it's souls meshing together so that the lovemaking is no longer just physical and about pleasure, but it's about doing something on a spiritual level with the person that you love. It's respiring. I'm breathing in his breath. He's breathing in my breath. It's about coming together and really being one at that moment. That's what happens when you get out of that zone about the performance and that relationship is evolving sexually. Baby, you do it so well, you might not need to do it but one or two times a week. Number two is the idea of conflict. Like I said, I just want to nail this last nail in. If you fight fair, like I said, and if you don't lose your focus, you will accept the change and let it take you into this new place. And so that means that you can't punish each other because things aren't the way that they were. We have a natural knee-jerk response to kind of want to punish when we're not happy about something. And you know, one thing that I've learned, this is the one advice my mom gave me about marriage. Don't mess with this on a man. This is attached to that. So for example, I was asking my husband, we went through what I call the marriage blueprint. It's a product even that I've created because it's what I know I owe the success of my marriage to. We went through those 7 pillars and we nailed down the things that made a difference in our life. And we mapped out how we would respond to each one. So 90% of those things have already happened and we just followed the blueprint. But I remember I told him, I said, you know, I don't want to take birth control, you know, forever. Would you consider
you know, getting, you know, a vasectomy. Every other question I'd ask, what are we going to do if we have in-laws that want to move in and we don't like it? What if your mom does something disrespectful to me? Why are we going to solve that? But when I got to that question, that man spoke in Ebonics. Let me tell you one thing. Nobody's going to touch nothing over here, right? And so he made that very plain. And I was like, but that's not fair. But my mom stopped me. She says, listen, if the man thinks that cutting his vas deferens is going to cause a problem with that, leave it alone. You're just going to have to work out something else. Maybe you'll just have to get the surgery. And I have to tell you, I followed her advice. You don't want to punish your man, and you don't want to make him think or emasculate him in any way. A lot of times also I found that when there's sexual dysfunctions in the marriage, a lot of times it's reflective of something that you've done, where you have verbally castrated that man. And so it's showing up now in his inability sometimes to join with you. You have to heal that. You got to go back and restore him. And you can do that by now changing tone. You know, I don't know what other word, adjective to use or verb, but like meeting his needs. And like one of the things I started doing to my husband, I started calling him Bear. I found a name for him. And I call him my Bear because nobody can make my husband do anything he doesn't want, right? Even though his disposition is very mellow, he is the boss, you understand? But he's my Bear because he's cuddly and he makes me feel very happy and secure. But then he's also ferocious. So he's my Bear. I did things like run his bath water. I found the things that were according to his love language. You got to learn to speak male. And then you got to teach your husband how to speak female. And so you need to learn what is his love language. They don't want to do the same things. You know, you might do things for them because we tend to do for each other what we want. But that's the biggest mistake. Do for him what he wants. I found that my husband likes shows of kindness. He likes for you to do things that kind of nurture or take, you know, like feeding him, giving him his food and preparing. He likes that. So that's what I give him because that's his love language. My love language is gifts. Well, I'm just being honest. It is. So I wanted to make him aware that I do like little nothings. My love language is gifts. So if any of y'all need me, www.bestmarriagekeys.com. And with that, I'm going to open the floor now for questions. We have 15 minutes. Yes. Come to the microphone, please.
Would you elaborate more on those seven pillars? I think I only heard two of them.
Sure. The seven pillars are morals and values. Morals and values is going to tell you how similar you are as your core self. It's the direction that you're going to take in your marriage. What do you value that's important? Is education important to you? What are your values about stealing? You know, different things like that. Cheating, lying, you know, morals and values. Then the other one is marital beliefs. Marital beliefs deals with what do you feel is the role of a husband and what do you feel is the role of a wife? How do you see your marriage playing out? What type of a relationship do you want? This is really important, but who discusses it? Nobody talks about this stuff. Family. Family has to do with, do you want children? If so, how many? What about your in-laws? How are we going to interrelate with your family? How do we settle squabbles should there be something that jumps off between the family members? Are we going to loan money to the family? How do we agree on terms or how much? Finances. Who's the money manager? Money management does not have to do with gender. It has to do with ability. So it talks about budgeting, talks about what's important, who's the saver, how much do you want to save? Are you going to have joint separate accounts, joint accounts or separate banking accounts? Sex and intimacy. A lot of couples get into problems because they have issues with one wanting sex a certain way or certain activities sexually, and the other one might not agree. Frequency is also an issue. You want to talk about how to keep intimacy alive in your relationship. So again, mapping all of those things out. Religion or faith. Religion makes up for about 20 to 30% of causes for divorce when the two people have different faiths that they practice. If you don't practice your faith, it's less of an issue. But you want to tie that down. What faith are you going to raise your kids to follow? That sort of thing. The last one is disagreements. How to resolve conflict in marriage so that it's productive. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, if you fight and you don't have a resolve over that argument, it's going to surface again a different time, different place, right? So you want to be able to artfully resolve, bring resolve to the disagreements that you have so that there is a progression, right? So those are those. And they can be found on my website, best marriage keys, and Raul will be giving you a handout where you can just log on and you can actually get it online. One of the things that I'll be doing is I'll be launching a television show, a reality show very soon. But one of the things that I'm doing is I want to be able to help couples where they are. The truth is most men aren't going to go anywhere. But you can get online counseling through Skype or a conference call line online. You can receive any of those instructions on those seven keys, those seven pillars, how to build those pillars in your marriage online. You can log on today and just start your tutorial. And they're video courses that are only like 3 minutes each lesson a piece with your questions and answers and things that you can work on. Listen, I know that that's the reason why I'm standing here today, and I know that that's the reason why I'm successfully married. You need a blueprint. You need a plan that's going to govern the union. What is there to be surprised about? I haven't really had any surprises because everything that we needed to endure, we've already talked about, and we had a game plan, and we just followed the game plan. Now, if my husband said he wanted separate checking accounts, that would have been an issue for me. Or if he said I had to have 4 or 5 kids, that would have been an issue. Next.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on a situation that I'm going through right now. My
sure.
mother-in-law is retired, and she very nicely offered to come up this summer to help with the kids while we were both working. Now I can't get rid of her. Mm-hmm. And I want to understand why everybody else in the world except for my mother-in-law understands why it's kind of so inconvenient for your mother-in-law to live with you.
The handouts, I'm sorry.
I know. She doesn't get it, though.
No, I'm just trying to make sure because I see people leave and I wanted to make sure that they got them. Okay. So she's there. She's been there for a while. She's recovered and everything and she hasn't left.
She won't leave, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you want to do about that? You want her to leave?
I want her out. She's starting to cause problems between me and my
So how does your husband feel about it?
His approach is that I should be addressing with her what my concerns are. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, just get her out. I'm done.
Okay. My answer to that is just like it is on the marital blueprint. The person that deals with their own family, that's how it should be. I should deal with my own family. Yeah. My husband should deal with his own family. And here's why. They're going to get mad, but they're never going to stay mad at their own flesh and blood. But you is a different story.
Yeah.
So you want your husband to deal with it. The problem is for most men, the hardest thing for them to do is to take a stand between their mother and their wife. Yeah. But it needs to be done. And I advocate that it should have been done at the beginning of the marriage, yeah. that it needs to be established. This is first. She is first now. Yeah. But you'll always be my mother. And I find that, you know, a mother sometimes is hard to let go, you know. So I think that you need to talk with your husband about that. And he needs to definitely go and have that conversation apart from you.
Okay.
Here's another thought, though. One thing that I did, because I had a similar situation with my mother-in-law. She took ill, and she was going to have to stay somewhere. I didn't care what it was going to take. I went ahead, and we bought we rented a place for her and got care for her. Listen, I know you don't want to let go of your money. You might want to squeeze Lincoln until he farts or whatever, but my point is when it comes down to peace of mind,
it's worth it.
It is worth it.
Yeah.
Even if you got to do some overtime or whatever, having her in her own place was the clincher. That's what kept us because I had the same issue. She started interfering.
Yeah. Okay.
And then before you know it, every time we argued, it was something concerning his mother.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next.
I just have a quick comment because I wanted to respond to that original question you had about the advice we had received about marriage. And I remember, you know, someone told me once, when you have no appointments, you have no disappointments. And sometimes we have so many expectations. And I always struggle with, like, oh, man, when I walk home this time and I'll come in the house and everything will be clean and dinner will be done. It's like, no, it's still the same mess. And, yes, you still have to make dinner. But I'm from a different culture. And I'm African, my background, but I'm very bicultural because I spent a lot of time in the United States. And my mother always serves my dad. I mean, that's just the relationship they have. And I struggle with it. Like, why do you always have to make him dinner and serve him this? And I say, hey, this is how my marriage works just fine like this. And I had gone to her once, to my mom, and said, I really need help because I'm so tired of having to do everything in the house, like cleaning this. And my husband just doesn't have energy to help me, and he doesn't want to help me. He'll feel trapped. So she said, well, don't worry. Your daughter's getting older. She'll help you. And so I was like, oh, is that the solution? Is that the only resolve I have? I can never expect my husband to help with the household. And I have taken her advice because I don't want him to feel trapped in the relationship that he, like, I have trouble with him sitting, watching TV, because I'm running around doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I do rely more on my daughter, who's now 11. She's older, so she can help. I don't know if that's the right approach.
So you're socializing her to do the same thing that you're doing.
Well, basically. Mm-hmm. But also, that's like, in my culture, women do.
But you have to decide, is that what you want? What I haven't heard you say is, it sounded as if you were espousing the fact that you don't want to continue that cultural view.
Right.
So if not, you have to recognize you're socializing your daughter with that same cultural view. That's right. Because she's a female, she has to cook and clean and do everything around the house, and the husband is exempt.
Well, and I have two sons, and I don't socialize them that way. Like, my sons have to clean, and they help, all, you know. But I also don't want my husband to feel like coming home tired, and then he has to do everything that I'm doing, too. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really know how to balance it, because I want him to help me more, but I don't want him to not be happy being home.
Right. Well, I think that you just have to come up with a plan about partnership. Mm-hmm. It's partnering. Now, it sounds like to me, if everybody's doing work, then does he really need to do any more work? You got to, I mean, I'm hearing two sons and then a daughter and then you. I mean, how much work do you have, you know? It sounds almost, to me, it almost sounds like you're just making up that because you want the man to do some work. As long as my kids were home and they were doing their chores, now they're in college. So, I mean, now it is my husband and I again. So then we go back, we revert it back to sharing of the responsibilities, right? So, because there is work that needs to be done. Now, I don't have my little slaves there. So if you have the three boys and a girl to help you out, that needs to be your question.
Right.
Yeah?
Okay.
Thank you. Next. Can you go to the microphone? I have time for maybe two more questions. This one and one more.
I don't actually have a question, but I do have a comment that someone has said to me in Bible study one time. And she said that a lot of people get into marriage, you know, for love. And she was saying that marriage is not about love. It's about helping you grow. So I just, you know, because I guess if once you growing means you start to accept that person for who they are, and you do things just based on who you are and let them be themselves. And in that interaction, that's where the love appears. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, my comment to that is this. I think marriage has to be more looked at as a strategy. It's about causing two destinies to come to pass. See, we look at it in one dimension, which is that I love him or I love her, she's so cute or whatever, and that's the only confine. You have to be considering, what are we going to be able to create together? What type of children are we going to, you know, also develop together? How are our lives and our life purposes going to merge so that they both find fulfillment and fruition? So, you know, I agree that it's not just about the love issue. It's broader than that. It's more robust. It needs to include, where am I going? Who am I going to be? Now, here's the problem. You say that you're a Renaissance woman. You want to do this. You want to shake and bake, and you want to really make something happen in the world, and your husband wants a traditional wife. That's going to be a problem. I don't care how much you love each other now. You're not going to love him very well after a little bit when he starts stifling you and telling you that you cannot, or he sabotages you so that you cannot do the things that you want to do. And, you know, that happens all the time. He's not there to help pick up the kids. He refuses to do this or that, so your hands are tied. So I think that love has to be, the concept of it has to be more robust than just love. It has to be about partnering for life and what are our outcomes and our goals, our anticipated destinations. Are we going to be able to arrive there together? And when you do that properly, you have what I call a power couple in the making. It's two destinies that collide together and fit so well succinctly that one builds the other and promotes the other and propels the other into its place and position while the other one does just the same thing. And so there's total fulfillment. Next.
Yes. So in my relationship, I made a choice to make a career change because I needed to get back into the field that I loved. And so I moved to your fair state with the intention of working maybe for a year and then moving elsewhere where my boyfriend, significant other, were going to retire. In order to be successful, I should be here much longer, and I love my job. He's not a fan of moving to the mid-Atlantic states, and we're at an impasse. And so this is where this is an eternal issue. Like, so we're having a hard time. How do you suggest I approach and manage this?
Well, again, you have to look at how important it is for you to grow on. You've said two important things. You said, I love it, and it's going to take longer. To me, love is about sacrifice. It's not a, love is a verb. So is he willing to put up with you while you wait another year or so? And I think you have to be definitive. You have to say, I need X amount of time more. Can you do that for me? And then I think also you should come up with a plan that's going to help him to find greater fulfillment in what he's doing here. You see what I'm saying? And I think that coming up with a plan is what's really going to help you. But ultimately, you've made a decision. You need, in order to really meet the goal which originally brought you here in the first place, you need to stay longer.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I think that concludes our session, unless anybody else has anything else that they would like to ask. Is that it? Did you all think that you got something today? Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you.